Hi everyone, and welcome to the fourth and last presentation by Professor Dominic Weiss from the University of British Columbia. Dominic is here for a couple of weeks in the framework of an exchange between the University of British Columbia and specifically the Peter Wall Institute and the Collège de France. Last week she gave us two lectures on deep mantle geochemistry and mantle plumes. And this week she's talking about applications of isotope geochemistry to environmental problems. Yesterday she talked about lead isotopes and pollution. And today she's going to talk about obsidian and what it can tell us about First Nation travel and customs in antiquity. Okay, it's all yours.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm going to talk about lead isotopes today again. So it's my pleasure to present these various topics. This one is mostly the work of one of my PhD students, Hai Macmillan, who defended basically a week before the lockdown last year. The idea also started through the visit of one of your colleagues, Edward Barth. That's how we actually developed this research cluster at UBC, the Indigenous Science, in collaboration with the archaeologists and anthropologists of the University of British Columbia. So if we reflect where we are in British Columbia, it's a very interesting setting for many reasons. The city, here downtown Vancouver, is located between the ocean and the mountains. It's a place where a lot of trades have happened. It's also a place where many things happen altogether. And it's important for us Occidental people to recognize that, especially UBC, is located on the traditional ancestral and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Here is UBC, and the Musqueam location, so the previous picture was showing Vancouver downtown and Stanley Park. UBC is located here on the Musqueam territory, original population, First Nation, living there and still living there. So when we talk about tracing the origin, the provenance of some of their belongings, and you're going to hear me going back and forth between belongings and artifacts, it's actually the same. The Musqueam people prefer using the word belonging, which is why most of the talk today is going to be based on objects from their territory, but it's exactly the same. So why is the ancient lithic provenance matter to indigenous people today? It's actually a very interesting scientific question, but it's also a very interesting political and very sensitive question. If we look at this website, which is Native Land in Canada, you can see that the Vancouver is up here. That's Vancouver Island. Vancouver is up here. In North America, we have many First Nation language and we have many First Nation territories. But then when we look, and that's a comparison of North America with the rest of the world, there is a very dense history of First Nations there. That's not for nothing. They called first. They were there before us. And we really need to be respectful of their history. Now, when you look at the distribution of treaties, that is formal agreements between the First Nations and the governments, you can see that British Columbia has a bit of a problem. There are basically none. And so most of the land, and when I say most of the land, it's over 95% of British Columbia is unceded. So there is no agreement with the First Nation. We could say we stole the land from them. So it's very important for us, when we can and when we are contacted by the indigenous populations themselves, to decipher ancient trade and exchange to help them in their negotiation for rights and title. This is a very important piece of information. So that's why I want to thank the Musqueam for collaborating with us, welcoming us on their land, and we'll take it from there. We're going to focus mostly on sourcing oxygen belongings. Many of the volcanoes, and if you go back to my talk of Tuesday when I talked about the comparison between the High Cascades in the US and the Garibaldi volcanic belt in Canada, are subduction zone volcanoes, andesitic up to rhyolitic. They have a lot of obsidian. The key question that many of the archaeologists ask is, what's the original context and the conditions? But when we focus in British Columbia, it's the key question is, where on the landscape did the ancestor collect the resources? And when we talk about resources, the one we have been focusing on is obsidian. Now, quite a few of us like obsidian. The question is, what makes obsidian so valuable for archaeologists? Why is it such an important tool? The first thing, it's brittle, and it requires a high replacement rate. You could say, well, then it's not good. But that favors a lot of trades and exchange, and as such, for archaeologists working on these questions, it's quite important. It produces the sharpest edge we can still make today. And if you look at the next picture, comparing a surgical scalpel with an obsidian, you can see the difference. The obsidian is still today the sharpest object that exists, way sharper than a scalpel. In West Pacific Northwest, it's also originating from very discrete pond sources in the landscape. And so that all these characteristics make obsidian very, very valuable. So the key question is where. Now, when we ask this question, we have a few challenges. The first challenge, and for those of you who know a little bit about archaeology, people have used for a long time trace elements concentrations. The problem is that trace elements concentrations are not unique to a volcano. So that gives very mixed messages. The second challenge, especially in British Columbia with the very steep mountains, is that many of the obsidians that have been used by the First Nations have been sampled in riverbeds. And so there is clearly a big question about where are they coming from. So in the framework of Rice thesis, we use a multi-proxy approach to source archaeological obsidian in British Columbia. A quick refresher of what we talked about. And when we deal with lead isotopic ratios, so fingerprint of the source of the volcano. If we look at the High Cascades, north-south orientation, Garibaldi belt with a slight rotation towards the west, we see basically a parallel change in radiogenic lead. Little variation in the High Cascades, but then a very clear trend with latitude for lead, which is reflected here with the radiogenic lead ratio, High Cascade, Garibaldi belt. So each of the volcanoes there has basically a unique signature, especially if you use other isotopic ratios, in this case, hafnium isotopes. The volcanoes are also very prominent features in the landscapes. This is Garibaldi, which is basically just around the corner from Vancouver. So one of the key issues is also the fact that all these belongings or artifacts have a lot of values for the First Nation. And we need to design ways to assess their origin without destroying them or altering them as much as possible. And that's an interesting exercise. So we carried out a series of analyses in our lab, mostly using this setup in situ. So that's a laser ablation where we analyze the trace element on the quadrupole and we analyze the isotopic composition on the ICP-MS. But to minimize the amount of material altered, we used a technique that it's called split stream laser ablation, and we came up with the word splitting obsidian. Under the laser, on the same spot, we analyze trace elements and lead isotopes. And you'll see better on the next picture. So that's 2 millimeter scale. The spot is barely visible. The spot is not the thick blue one, it's inside. And that was agreeable for the First Nation because basically you couldn't see it with the naked eye. So what we did is develop the method in 2 goals. The first, we did some subgroups of objects using a completely non-destructive technique. So what we could do is take the belonging, use a PXRF, a portable XRF instrument, which is shown here. It's basically that size. And you can analyze trace element concentration. That's the first thing. So the Musqueam came to us with a series of questions. They had a series of obsidian. The first project, I can't tell you which location, which First Nation. They came with a series of objects. They wanted to know where they were coming from, but they didn't want them to be destroyed. The major option is that all these obsidian could come from some of the volcanoes from Canada. I'll show you in a second where they are. We needed to put a frame, and so here we analyze the sources. We managed to get some samples of the obsidians from the volcanoes, and we analyzed them, we compared PXRF, and as those were pieces of rocks, we constrained the data with in situ ICP-MS. And basically you can see that each volcano in British Columbia has a signature that's almost unique, but trace elements are rarely completely unique. The other thing we did too is we did Raman spectra analysis, and I probably should go to the next slide to show you what this does for us. No? So the Raman is basically a microscope studying the differences in the net in the lattice of the which is not exactly lattice but the width of the obsidian. And basically what we see is that again you see differences between, for instance, Mount Edzaza and Anaheim Peak, Silverthorne and Garibaldi. That's a statistical analysis with 95% confidence ellipse on these different rock samples. Now, if you compare the rock samples, the sources that we had access to, and the artifacts that were given to us, you can see that we had 3 categories of artifacts. The circles, which is the vast majority of these artifacts, overlap with Anaheim Peak. And they do that for trace element. They also do that for Raman spectra. Then we have 2 others. We have this artifact number 4, which could be coming from Edzaiza, and the artifact number 30, we couldn't overlap with anything. So just, I should have put this before, that's the Raman microscope. That's what each volcano, the spectrum of the Raman shift of each volcano. And when you compare the artifacts with the volcano, grouping all the data, you see this again. So all the artifacts can overlap with Anahim. It's not a one-to-one equivalence, but it may say that those artifacts were coming from Anahim. The artifact number 4 is overlapping with Edziza, and we remain with a question mark with the number 30. So the second step that we can take with a subselection, so on the basis of the non-destructive method, we have an idea of what's possible, but then we take a subselection of the samples, and we do some minimally intrusive analysis with the laser ablation. And so what we see, the options here are these 4 volcanoes. So this is the sources. We analyze the rock. And again, we cross-check our analysis, because when we had the rock, we could analyze as much material as we needed. We can see the variation in the rock sources. Again, so we're extending this trend. And it was very nice to see that this trend in the Garibaldi volcanic belt continues basically all the way up to Mount Edziza. So when we looked at the belongings, this is what we have. We have our groups. And once again, you can see that some belongings overlap with the Anahim Peak, some belongings overlap with Mount Edziza, and we have a question mark here. And when we look at the overall comparison in lead-lead diagrams, Anahim, most of the belongings, Mount Edziza for number 4, this one, the answer is not perfectly clear. So the answer to this question, all these artifacts were coming with this archaeological site, basically lost in the middle of British Columbia, it's really in the middle of nowhere, is that some of the artifacts were coming from 360 kilometers away, as the crow flies, from Mount Edziza, and the other ones were coming from Anahim. So that was the first project, which was actually 2 projects. The first was establishing the context with our rock samples, and the second was to test the question, where are the artifacts coming that have been found on this site coming from? The answer is there's about a range of threat of 600 kilometers. So we had to do that and be very careful. And then after that, that's basically when we put together a research cluster. And so we have philosophers, we have archaeologists, anthropologists. And the part is basically to talk with the local indigenous population and have them come to us with their question, not us with our Western attitude go towards them. And the Musqueam, so the First Nation where UBC is located, came to us, that's the Musqueam, with a fairly important question. They had all kinds of lytics material on a series of sites, and they wanted us to know where it was coming from. We have seen an equivalent of this map. That's all the name place of the Musqueam in UBC is out there. Their current basis is here in Marpole, Cessnam. And they came to us with these 14 artifacts, belongings. I need to shift to belongings, no. They all obsidian except this one, which is a volcanic glass. Not obsidian, it's a fine-grained volcanic material. And they wanted to know where these samples are coming from.
So we did the same thing, we did the same approach. We did our structural characteristic on each of the samples. So here we have the BC volcanoes up here. What we could see on the basis of this survey is that some of these patterns that in the, we had two groups of signals in these belongings were not matching BC. So we reached out to the south and got some obsidians from Oregon, some from Bronze Bench, and I'll show you in a minute where they are, and Glass Buttes in Oregon. So Bronze Bench and Glass Buttes. You can see that there are a few signals here that are not observed in the BC volcanoes. That's probably just reflecting the presence of magnetite with, as micro-inclusion in the obsidian, and Bronze Bench as a very distinctive signal. So the group A of belongings matches nothing of what we have in BC, but matches pretty well what's in Bronze Bench. Now, this, again, Rai was very fond of doing statistical analysis when you treat. So we have our two groups of artifacts. We have the group A as diamonds and the group B as circles. You can see that group B is overlapping with here, and the group A is very different and overlaps Bronze Bench and nothing else. It has no signal comparable to what's observed in British Columbia. Same thing when we do lead isotopes. We have our group B here. The fine-grained material is the squares. The rest is all the obsidians. They basically overlap or fall within the field of the Garibaldi. Glass Buttes is here. The group A is completely distinctive. It's a very different signal. It's way, way higher 208 ratios than anything present in British Columbia. Same thing with trace element ratios, and there are a lot of diagrams here showing you various ratios. The bottom line is you can see, so all these were measured by PXRF. Rai sourced 1,430 samples. He's building a database, mostly because he sees a major application for all of this. And you can see that the group B is here around Glass Butte. The group A, Bronze Bench, partly with Garibaldi in trace element ratio, but remember, that didn't work with lead isotopes. And I want to show this because many archaeologists still use binary trace elements diagram. So where you have one element versus another, and what you see here is that nothing is strictly distinctive. That's not too surprising. A lot of statistical treatment, LDA here, again, Bronze Bench for the group A obsidians and Glass Buttes or obsidian cliffs for the group B. So if you, and again, Rai loves statistical treatment, he tried every single thing, and everything is pointing towards the same direction. So what that means, and I told you I was going to be way shorter than the other conferences, the outcomes is that among all these belongings here found in Cessnam, Marpol, in British Columbia, it shows that they were coming, some were coming from Bronze Bench, some were coming, so 1,000 kilometers away, some were coming from Glass Buttes, and potentially some were coming from the obsidian cliffs. So again, this has major implication. Nobody expected that these obsidians would be coming from so far away. Now, it doesn't mean that the ancestor of the current First Nation tribes in BC went all the way there, but what it shows is the existence of a lot of traits among the various First Nations in North America, and that was a very nice finding. So we really like, so this picture here is taken in Marpole, UBC is at the end here. That's the mainland of where all the Musqueam people live. That's where they have their center. And they learn to talk, I mean, or we learn to talk to them and let them come with their question. And that's a very important exercise to do. So I want to thank you. I want to thank them all. And I also want to thank all our collaborators in this specific case of this study, essentially Aviva Rathbone and Jason Woolman, who are both official archaeologists working for the Musqueam people. Thank you very much.